From the presidential room of the Statler Hotel in Washington, D.C., CBS brings you an address by the President of the United States, Harry S. Truman, on the subject civilian defense and our foreign policy. Mr. Truman is guest of honor this evening at the Civilian Defense Conference of National Organizations. The conference includes representatives of over 400 organizations. The president will be presented by Millard Caldwell, Civilian Defense Administrator. Mr. Caldwell.
Mr. President, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, although civil defense has only recently been recognized by the public as a serious national security problem, there have been a few people who have long been aware that without civil defense, the nation cannot be secure. One of the first to recognize this was President Truman. In March 1949, the president transferred civil defense planning into his own executive office. Throughout the development of the National Plan for Civil Defense, the president took a keen interest in the whole matter. Once the National Plan had been issued and accepted by the states and the cities of this country, the president established the Federal Civil Defense Administration by executive order on December 1 of last year. At the same time, a bill to provide a continuing legal basis for civil defense was drawn at the president's direction and submitted to the Congress. Shortly thereafter, the Congress made this bill a law with only one dissenting vote. The president's personal leadership and guidance have given substantial impetus to the whole civil defense program. President Truman has made it clear that he considers civil defense of the greatest importance to our national security. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Governor Caldwell, distinguished guests, and fellow Americans, this conference is being held to consider one of the most important tasks facing our country. The lives of many millions of our fellow citizens may depend on the development of a strong civil defense. The threat of atomic warfare is one which we must face, no matter how much we may dislike it. We can never afford to forget that the terrible destruction of cities and of civilization as we know it is a real possibility. There are two things our country must do to face this awesome and terrible possibility. One of them is to look to our civil defense. So long as there is any chance at all that the atomic bombs may fall on our cities, we cannot gamble on being caught unprepared. Let's not fool ourselves. There is such a chance. We must prepare for it. The other thing we must do is to try to prevent atomic war from coming. That's what I've been working for ever since I became president. That's what our foreign policy is all about. The foreign policy of the United States is based on an effort to attain peace. Every action we have taken has had this aim in view. We are right in the midst of a big debate on foreign policy. A lot of people are looking at this debate as if it were just a political fight. But the stakes are a lot more important than the outcome of an election. The thing that is at stake in this debate may be atomic war. Our foreign policy is not a political issue. Our foreign policy is not a political issue. It is a matter of life and death. It is a matter of the future of mankind. These two things, civil defense and foreign policy, are what I will talk to you about tonight. As you see, they are closely tied together, and they are both concerned with a form of warfare which is more destructive than anything the world has ever known before in its history. Our civil defense problem starts with a few basic facts. Because there was an atomic explosion in the Soviet Union in 1949, we must act on the assumption that they do have atomic bombs. They have planes that could drop atomic bombs upon our cities. No matter how good our air defense may be, or how big an air force we build, a determined air attack by the Soviet Union could drop bombs upon this country. Our Air Force experts say planes would get through, however good our defenses may be. The purpose of atomic attacks would be to strike a death blow at our cities, to burn out our centers of production, and to create panic among the people. There is no complete protection against an atomic bomb attack. But there is a lot we can do to reduce the number of deaths and injuries and to check panic. We must organize ourselves in every city, factory, office, and home. Civil defense is a responsibility which begins with the individual. It begins with you. It begins with you. It is shared by the city, the state, and the nation. We have two immediate jobs. One is to teach all our people how to protect themselves in the event of an enemy attack. The other is to organize and train millions of volunteers as active members of the United States Civil Defense Corps. That's what you're here for. The question we're putting up to you, men and women, at this conference is, how can we do these jobs as quickly and as efficiently as it is possible? We need your help in getting our fellow citizens to realize that this is a very serious business. So long as we face the threat of an atomic attack on the United States, we've got to build a strong civil defense organization. But even with such an organization, our losses in an atomic war, if we should have one, and God forbid, those losses would be terrible. Whole cities would be casualties. Cleveland or Chicago, Seattle or New York, Los Angeles or Washington, or any of our other great cities might be destroyed, and they could be destroyed. Even with such losses, frightful as they would be, I think this country would survive and would win an atomic war. But even if we win, an atomic war would be a disaster. The best defense against the atomic bomb is to prevent the outbreak of another world war and to achieve a real peace. We must bend all our energy to the job of keeping our free way of life and to keep it without another war. We can have peace only if we have justice and fair dealing among nations. The United Nations is the best means we have for deciding what is right and what is wrong between nations. It is a great attempt to make the moral judgment of mankind effective in international affairs. Nothing is more important if mankind is to overcome the barbaric doctrine that might makes right. Our best chance to keep the peace and to stay free is for nations that believe in freedom to stick together and to build their strength together. That is what we call collective security. We have been trying since the last war was over, and even before it was over, to build a system of collective security among those countries who really believe in the principles of the United Nations. I think we've made a lot of progress. I know that some people have become impatient with our efforts to establish collective security, because we have not yet succeeded in attaining world peace. but we are on the right road. There are cynics who scorn the United Nations, who are indifferent to the need for cooperation among the free peoples. They do not understand that our best hope for peace is to bind together the nations that are striving for peace and to increase their strength to stop aggression. The United Nations is being severely tested today because of the Korean conflict. The fighting there is requiring great sacrifices. In a time of crisis, there is a tendency to look for some easy way out, regardless of the consequences. But we must not be misled. We must not lose sight of the world picture and the critical importance of the United Nations if we are to reach a permanent solution. Communist aggression in Korea is a part of the worldwide strategy of the Kremlin to destroy freedom. It has shown men all over the world that communist imperialism may strike anywhere, anytime. The defense of Korea is part of the worldwide effort of all the free nations to maintain freedom. It has shown free men that if they stand together and pool their strength, communist aggression cannot succeed. The firm stand of the United Nations in Korea has checked the advance of the communist imperialism throughout Asia. It is using up the military resources of the Chinese communists to such an extent that they are not able to carry out the designs of communist imperialism against the independence of other Asian countries. And the people of those countries who have been resisting communist aggression have now been given new hope and new courage. The communist assault in Indochina has been checked by the free people of Indochina with the help of the French. In Malaya, the British are holding firm against communist guerrilla attacks. In the Philippines, in Burma, and in other places in Asia, communist-led guerrillas are being blocked. The fight against aggression in Korea has also dealt a heavy blow to the Kremlin conspiracy outside of Asia. It has brought new hope and courage to free men in Europe and in the Middle East who face the Soviet menace across their frontiers. The fight against communist aggression in the Far East is the fight against communist aggression in the West and in the whole world as well. The struggle in Korea is a long and a hard one, but it can be won, and our policy is designed to win it. The Chinese rulers are losing large numbers of their soldiers. As these losses increase, it will become clearer and clearer to them that aggression does not pay. They can have peace when they give up their aggression and stop the fighting. Meanwhile, the strength of all the free nations is growing. The Soviet plan of world conquest is becoming more and more impossible to achieve.